Righty-ho, everybody. So, here at Press X to Start, we decided to do something a little special for you guys.
Oh,
and
gosh.
Going forward, we might, you know, put all of our extra topics
our evergreen,
in this part.
Our evergreen content.
Yeah. Here we have a DLC pack.
Yeah.
Welcome to DLC pack number one, ladies and gentlemen, for Press X to Start.
This is part of the season pass, by the way.
You won't even have to pay for these.
Because we are a free-to-play service.
There you go.
Sure, we sure are. So,
you're going to have to pay for the diamonds.
You're right.
You got to get that energy.
There you go.
So, our first topic of this ongoing series is we decided to list off our top five games, and we wanted to, you know, just to help get to know us a little more as gamers.
Yeah, it's one of those things that me and Cameron wanted to do in the first episode.
By the way, Cam's not here.
Yeah, he sure isn't. So there's a timestamp of where we actually
record. So as far as you're concerned, he doesn't have a top five.
Matter of fact, he doesn't exist.
It's all Mafia. It's all Mafia.
That's Effect 1. That's Effect 2. That's Effect 3.
No, and also, this is something I wanted to do in the first episode when it was just me and Cam, but we kind of got sidetracked talking about what was the best game of 2017.
Right.
So it ended up not being in, but like I really wanted to do this just so you get an idea of when I say X game is like X, this is where my frame of reference is coming from. When
exactly.
I compare X to X. Yeah.
Yeah. So
X to X.
Let's just jump into it. Starting around, we're gonna go through our fives and go upwards.
Yeah.
So
we're gonna start by five and go up to one.
Exactly.
There you go.
So my number five is Metal Gear Solid 3. Snake Eater.
Okay.
Now some of you are probably asking why that one, and not so much that it's a better overall game than any of the other Metal Gear Solids, but that was the story that had me the most invested in, for some reason was also the easiest to follow of the Metal Gear Solid games.
Ironic, it's the game that sets off the, oh, this is going to be convoluted as fuck going forward, isn't it?
Exactly, but like, the game itself, it's so, because I don't think anybody in this room has played Metal Gear Solid 1. Like, the old...
Oh, Metal Gear.
I mean, yeah, Metal Gear.
Metal Gear. Because we've all played Metal Gear 1.
Yeah. And doesn't...
Solid 1. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And doesn't 3 sort of predate...
Yeah, 3 is the earliest... Well, yeah, 3 is the earliest point in the Metal Gear timeline.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
it's the
this,
origin of Big Boss.
So, in a way... The Metal Gear Solid series is like Fast and Furious, where just the timeline is all over the place.
Right. It's worse.
Yeah.
It's worse.
And so... But, like, the game... But because of that...
Technically, the timeline is 3, Portable Ops, Peace Walker...
Good lord.
Metal Gear 2. I want to say Snake's Revenge is in canon or not canon at some point around there.
Yeah.
Metal Gear Solid 2, Metal Gear... No, fuck that, I messed up. 5 is in between Metal Gear and... And
what we're saying is,
okay.
But because of the convoluted nature of everything, 3 has a unique ability to actually have sort of an insular story where it gets to tell its own thing and not be weighed down by all of the stuff that comes that because there's nothing preceding it,
right?
It wields the arm of being a prequel well,
exactly.
In that characters will show up and like, oh, this is that character,
yeah.
But then you're asking the question. The question you ask by the end of the game is, how did that character get to the character X that we know?
Yeah.
Games later, we're all explaining that to you.
And the characters in the game are just so interesting, and it has some of the best boss fights I've ever played in the game. Like, and the way that you approach certain boss fights, like...
It's the height, It's the height of Hideo Kojima being Hideo Kojima.
Exactly, because, like, even, like, the way you fight the end is, you could... There's a different way to game that system, or the way you fight, what's his name? The Sorrow. If you don't kill anybody in
like
the game, then you can just walk up.
That fight was literally 2 seconds.
Exactly. So, like, it's a very innovative game.
Really?
Yeah. You can game the system. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And also, there's a moment in that game that will always live in my heart where you're climbing up the ladder and the Snake Eater theme is playing.
I think
the
strength of Metal Gear 3 is it's a James Bond game.
Yep.
Okay.
Except if James Bond was set in Vietnam.
Exactly.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, that's my number five.
Okay. So, interestingly enough, my number five is a toss-up between Metal Gear 4 and Metal Gear 5. I honestly couldn't choose which one because Metal Gear 5 is so mechanically a perfect game, but it doesn't have a story, Meanwhile, Metal Gear 4 is 90% story.
That's true. That
10%
is,
game.
That is a straight... And it's not even like a cutscene game like Asura's Wrath where you're actually interacting. It's like a movie and with little play sections.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, like, watching it not as a kid, like 10 years ago when the game came out,
yeah.
I don't feel like... Okay, point of contention now, I'm playing Valkyria Revolution, and that game has 15-minute cutscenes, which pissed me off because literally nothing is happening. Characters are just talking about the same thing over and over again.
Right.
This game does that, but because it feels like a movie and it feels like this is pushing the narrative forward,
yeah.
I don't mind the 30-minute cutscenes.
Right, right.
But yeah, Metal Gear 4 is amazing, and the Metal Gear 5 mechanically has the best... It's Metal Gear never felt better than Metal Gear 5.
Right.
And it has every system that you would want in this type of game in it, and... I'm just really torn between picking one of them. Because on one hand, one's a perfect game, except for a story. The other game is like, it's a good Metal Gear game.
Yeah.
A great story that builds off everything they built up.
Okay, okay.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
So that was Metal Gear Solid Corner.
All right. My number five, surprising enough, is Metal Gear... No.
Metal Gear Rising Revenge.
No, my number five is actually Super Smash Brothers. Melee.
Ooh. Mm.
Yes.
Heads up, Super Smash Bros. 4 Wii U was in my honorable mentions.
Okay. So, to me, I would say this was the best Smash Brothers game, the best Mario game.
Okay.
The best Zelda game.
I'd argue the shit out of all of those. So,
it is
watch
the best,
young man.
It is the best Star Fox game.
Best Star Fox. So, yeah, like, to me, like, this was... This hit, like, right as I was in my Tekken phase.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I was, at that point, I believe that was around, I don't remember. But, like, I was just inundated with finding just frames for Tekken, which is a very nerdy thing where you do, like, a different type of attack.
Right.
When you hit the just frame.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I know
so,
what you mean.
Right, yeah, you're right. So, when they were, like.
Melee was 2001.
Okay.
So, I was 12.
Okay, okay. You were 12.
Yeah.
Never
Jeez.
Forget.
Jeez. Anyways, so, like, the fact that when... I
was not 11.
Oh, no.
I'm so sorry.
Play Beyonce's song.
Okay, but, so, yeah, like, that game was such a great game for me. Like, I just... My mains were Falco and Link. I could pretty much play with anybody, but like Falco and Link, I was gonna put some work in.
I played exclusively with Link.
Really?
I didn't pick.
Oh, and Ganondorf. Oh my god, Ganondorf.
My thing with Super Smash Brothers, especially before, because like, 4 Wii U is my favorite Super Smash Brothers.
Okay.
Point Break.
Okay.
Like, I remember playing on N64, and I played it based on. Who's my favorite Nintendo character?
Yeah.
Link.
Yeah.
So I picked Link and I moved forward with Link. And then I got to that point between Melee and Brawl where Link got
nerfed.
Yeah.
I suddenly couldn't play him and I felt really bad, especially
yeah.
when the game came out. All my friends were fucking whooping my ass. Like, Marcus got way better at Fox. And I'm like, oh, this is not great. So, like, for me, I love Melee. But, like, Melee falls into the old game is old for me when I think about it. And, like, for me, when I think of...
No.
Well, I think of playing
like,
Super Smash Brothers.
Even,
I think
even,
of playing 4 Wii U.
Because also,
yeah.
like...
Even now, I feel like Melee still had the best fighting mechanics.
There is
and
things that you... There is things you can get away with in Melee, though, that you can't get away with in Brawl. Because they
yeah.
had not tweaked the system yet.
Right.
And so, like, I can see why people like Melee a bit more because it moves faster.
But... Melee for me, at this point, Melee for me feels more like a technical fighter than I actually want to play as a game.
It's like a Mugen game.
and that's why I love
and,
it. Like
it speaks to your preference.
Exactly. And
yeah.
the fact that like the game was made better when people found out about the technique of wave dashing, and I was just like, wait, you're telling me there is a way that I can make Ganondorf move a lot faster across the screen when I'm playing in Final Destination? What? Boy.
And if you were curious, my mains in that game... were Fox, Captain Falcon, and Marth.
Oh, Marth, yes. I almost forgot.
Marth is one of those characters where, like, if you don't know how to do his combos, he's kind of useless. Yeah. But if you know how to get it,
I will say one thing about Melee. That game is the reason why we're getting bomb-ass Fire Emblem games right now.
That's true. That is true. That's true.
Because they pushed those Fire Emblem characters hard in that game where no one knew anything about them.
Roy's our boy!
So much. And Roy went, like, gone.
Yeah. Right now, for Wii U.
Because Roy was redundant when they brought Ike in.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Like, yeah. Marth had a place.
Yeah, that's my number five. I love that game.
Okay. My number four is a game that I know for sure is going to be on Avery's list, Devil May Cry 3.
Well, now you fucking ruined it, because Devil May Cry 3 is at the top of my list.
I know.
There we go.
I'm sorry.
All right, so, say your piece.
To me, Devil May Cry 3 is the greatest action game ever made.
Hands down.
Action game? Greatest action
game
ever made? There are two schools of sort of action games.
I need to find that, yeah.
Action game. There are, like...
There's the God of War type of action game where it's all about brutality and damage.
Like, pure action game.
And then there's the technical action game, which is more of like a Devil May Cry, like more of like a Japanese Bayonetta, where there's a sort of a fighting game system in there.
I'll say this.
Where they focus on combos.
It's a Twitch action game.
Well, yes.
Like, okay. It's a game where you have to know, like, there's no button prompts, there's no nothing. You have to train yourself to have the hand-eye coordination and the Twitch instincts to understand the mechanics and just whoop ass.
Right.
And, like,
okay.
I just think that it's the most up and, like, even more so a little bit than Bayonetta, I think.
More so than Bayonetta.
This game was expertly put together in terms of action. It is amazing what they got away with in that game and how kinetic that entire experience is.
So what are the weapons?
Well, here's that was the
easy. I get
okay,
this
so I'll talk about this all the goddamn time. Okay, like one of the things that the 3 does better than all the other games, it gives Dante a super diverse suite of weapons. The first Devil May Cry game, he had like the sword, he gets another sword, and then he gets gauntlets.
And then you had the default with Ebony and Ivory.
Yeah.
Right.
And then like you had a couple of extra weapons. 2 had the same thing, you're like, here's some gauntlets and more swords.
Right.
Here it's like, okay, you start off, you've got the Rebellion, his normal sword. Then you immediately, after you first boss Cerberus, this is where the game starts to grab me. You get that 3-pronged nunchaku, where it's nunchucks, but it's got 3 bars.
Okay. Wait, are they shotguns?
Or no, game? You're talking about Bayonetta.
Okay.
And then after that, you fight Agni and Rudra, who are the weird golem guys holding swords. You get the swords, and now he has these twin scimitars that do fire and wind damage.
Okay.
Then you fight Nevin, and you get her. It's a scythe, electric guitar.
Yep.
Okay.
And then you eventually fight. Well, you fight Beowulf. You beat him. You don't get his weapon. Virgil gets the weapon.
Yeah.
And then Dante gets it later from Virgil, and you get the standard gauntlets where you pretty much do Street Fighter moves.
And
then you combine that with the stance system they had. We had Gunslinger, Royal Guard, Swordmaster, and then you had these endless.
I feel like I've played this game before.
And
I just
the thing
can't
about
remember.
DMC is
and
like,
you have this endless suite of interesting combos. And it was a game where I played exclusively. Like, I'm not good at we've talked about this multiple times. You're way better at games when it comes to a mechanical, technical thing.
Yeah.
I'm just not that good. But Devil May Cry 3 was the one game I sat down and said, no, I will fucking
learn
how to do this move
so
I can use it effectively in this fight.
And the way that Avery brought up, like, the fact that there was, you know, the stance system, it gave the game an amount of variety that most action games will never have.
Right.
Because you could play things, you could approach different fights in different ways. You could prep
depending
for a
on
fight almost
love,
in like the way that you would for like The Witcher. but through action games.
Right.
And that was really cool. And then on top of that, the story goes full dork with Dante.
It's funny because it goes full dork with Dante while at the same time actually telling a really, actually really good Devil May Cry story.
Exactly.
Right.
But
so,
like, DMC 3, if you ever want to know why somebody would love the character of Dante, DMC3 is the game to go to because it encapsulates why he's so awesome.
Yeah.
Because he's not.
My big thing about Dante was that he was someone's idea of someone who was cool, but if that person thought him up was a giant dork.
Yep.
Okay.
So like he does things super seriously but it's just dumb, and he recognizes it's dumb. We all recognize he's dumb. Yeah. The game recognizes it's dumb, and it just becomes pure awesome. Like, at one point, one of the characters shoots him with a rocket, and he just rides that rocket like a skateboard for an entire scene.
Sure does.
And I'm just like, oh, this fucking game is fucking rad.
And
the music was great.
The music was great. Yeah. It had one of my favorite opening scenes to a game where all those demons came up in his place, and he was just...
And the best part about that scene is it showed you pretty much every move you could do with Dante from Jump Street in that one scene. Like, it was clearly a cutscene.
Yeah.
It was like, here's a cutscene to demonstrate some things like you can do as Dante. Like,
right.
He shoots a demon at one point and then rides a demon around like a fucking hoverboard. And like, that's something you can do in the game.
Yeah, okay.
And on top of that, getting that sweet, sweet triple S. I mean, that sweet, like, when you get that sensational and you know you've been whooping that ass, boy.
Like, I was never more excited to be a PlayStation 3 fan when they released the Definitive Edition for Devil May Cry 1, 2, and 3 all on one disc. I got to go back and play Devil May Cry 3 with trophies. Like, my only lament in life now is the fact that I do not have time to go back and try and platinum that game. Because that is a hard...
Is it hard platinum?
Yeah, it is.
Fucking hard.
Yeah. That game is relentless.
When it launched, they had to make an easy mode for America.
Yeah,
oh, really?
Because that's how hard it was.
They had to make a
so
Weenie Hut Junior
version. Was it hard? Like the enemies had like a lot of health, or was it hard, like
it was?
They hit enemies hit hard. It was unforgiving.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's almost like a Dark
Souls. And that's another thing.
Before Dark Souls.
No, because it plays a lot quicker.
Well, yeah, than, right.
But
right.
It's one of those things where it was in that generation of action games with the Ninja Gaiden and all that stuff where like they rewarded you for getting good.
Yeah.
But if you wasn't good, you're getting murked.
Right. The irony is, I used to be a big fan of games like that, and then the Dark Souls generation came around, I'm like, I don't have time for this. I love Ninja Gaiden.
I hated Ninja Gaiden.
But also, Dark Souls ugly, bro.
Yeah, that's true. Like, anyway, so let's move on to my number four. I'm trying to keep this as short as possible. My number four is my favorite Zelda game of all time, and it's only from a presentational standpoint. I think Wind Waker is a better game, but I fucking love Twilight Princess.
Okay.
Like, that is a game that when, like, everyone was getting, like, we've talked about this multiple times. I only got really into games in the PS3 generation. So, like, my first Zelda game I've ever actually really played was Wind Waker on the GameCube.
Okay, yeah.
So, I don't have an Ocarina of Time thing. I don't have a Majora's Mask thing. I don't have any of the older Zelda things. So, my only real contact with Zelda was, like, him in Super Smash Bros. And then Wind Waker.
Okay.
And then when they showed all of Twilight Princess, and it was this dark, moody, gloomy, kind of gritty medieval fantasy thing, which is so fucking in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's still a super dumb Zelda game. It's like there's a chicken with a weird human face you can find, and just fucking bizarre and shit.
I remember
I was a super big fan of wolves, and Link turned into a wolf.
Yep.
And then,
oh, so he turned into a wolf in that one.
Yeah, and then Midna is my favorite Zelda, like, sort of side companion character of all time.
Yeah.
Like, she's a super fun character, while not being as annoying as Navi or as unwieldy as Fi from Skyward Sword.
Okay.
I love everything about that game. I think it has a really amazing Zelda story in terms of we're actually telling a Zelda story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the entire situation with the Twilight Realm, what's going on with Midna, and this weird fucking Zant, who's the creepiest Zelda villain of all time. If the game has one flaw, it's that it gets hijacked by Ganon at the end of the game. Where, like, you're playing, I'm about to beat Zant. What the fucking Ganondorf?
I remember when the game got announced, and people was hype because it was such a departure, or it was like such a different direction.
Well, like, because they'd gone from this weird kiddie cel-shading thing, which is a fun and amazing game, which I was on board with from day one because I had no Zelda context, to this is what all those old people who were playing Zelda really wanted. It, what spawned that really famous...
Like people, since Ocarina of Time, people were like, this was the direction they thought it was going to go.
Well, not the Ocarina of Time, it's like Link to the
Past. I'm sorry, my bad.
Yeah, it's one of those things, it spawned that really prolific IGN meme that exists till now. The image of these four IGN editors is looking at the screen like blank face with the total thing, and then the next image is them just fucking hype that shit. That was them watching the Zelda reveal. Right.
Yeah, so like as I mentioned earlier when we were on talks of Breath of the Wild, I have no context for Zelda, so great.
Trust me, I've never played a Zelda game, but like the way that Avery's with Star Wars, it's kind of like, Zelda is so entrenched into gaming culture that I just know a lot of stuff about it.
If Twilight Princess had one problem, it had the same problem that Breath of the Wild had, where it was a caught between two systems. Where it came out on Wii and then it came out on GameCube at the same time, but the GameCube version was harder to find than the Wii version. So I ended up playing I played the first time on Wii. Did not like the motion controls. But whatever. I played it because it was a Zelda game. And then I got it when they re-released it for Wii U, and I'm like,
right.
You got the Wolf Amiibo?
Okay, so my number four is Armored Core 3 Last Raven. Now, I am a... As you can see, there's probably a little trend going on with my game. I am a huge... Well, I was a huge Armored Core fan. I stopped before 5 because I didn't like the way they changed the controls.
You also stopped because they stopped making games.
Well... Yes.
Yeah, I want to point out, you didn't buy 5. You're the problem of Armored Core.
No, I spoke with my wallet because I did not like how they changed. I think when they went to Sega, they basically made the controls like a modern like first-person shooter. Like one stick is a look, one stick is a move.
Okay.
Whereas the classic Armored Core, boy, is that tricky. It is... L1 and R1 rotates the armor core left and right, and then L2 and R2 looks up and down. Yeah, so you're doing a bunch of like finger motions trying to get everything right. So, and the thing is, like, for as difficult as that game was to control, I just loved. Okay, so this actually kind of stems with my number one pick, which I'll get into. It's the fact that like. You're playing in this kind of complicated vehicle, and the idea is in order to progress, you have to get good at figuring out how this thing works. So that process of figuring out, like, and then once you actually get good and you're like doing a bunch of crazy shit, so awesome. And like that's like my high point with playing games is like, all right, these are the controls. How can I play this, or how can I figure out the controls to be the most efficient at whatever the gameplay is. And like I'm a big mech guy. I've actually been looking up Gundam models to purchase.
Ooh, if you do, get the Barbatus Lupus Rex.
Really?
This is a change to a Gundam.
Yeah.
Gundam.
Yeah.
But anyway, it is my favorite Gundam.
Back to Gundam.
It's my favorite Gundam of all time.
Really?
Like straight up. Just watch Iron Blood Orphans and not come out of that and think that's the coolest Gundam ever made.
Okay. So yeah, that's my number four.
Okay. Nope. My number three is a series as well. Tekken 3.
Tekken 3
is the best Tekken.
Comic Chameleon.
I love Tekken 3 so much, and
yes.
Tekken 3 was. I remember playing it, probably overplaying it.
Yes.
When it was, yeah. And it was the only Tekken game, I think, where I beat the game with every character and got all the endings and all that stuff.
Yep.
And I was, for some reason, I was still really invested in the Tekken lore at the time.
Okay.
It started to lose me after a while, but like...
It's a little difficult.
And then it introduced Jin, and you know, like, they revealed, like, how his mom died, and I was like, "Who's this Jin guy? Why does he look like Kazuya?"
The fact that his stance was, or his fighting style wasn't Mishima,
exactly.
I was just like, wait, he's just like, fuck all that.
I just have so many fond memories. Like there is arguably like Tekken 4 is arguably a more technically proficient game than Tekken 3 is, and like, Tekken 4 was when, especially because they jumped to a new system,
right,
they were able to get a bit more interesting with like interacting with environments,
and using just frames and stuff,
Tekken 3, I just have so many fond memories. Also, that was the last time that Tekken had character specific music.
Yeah. Yes.
After a while, they started doing just more ambient and like techno like music. Right. But like that was the time where they had like, you had Law theme, you had Rom theme, you had like, and that music was so, it was so good.
Like I could remember like sitting down in practice mode and just like, all right, I'm going to figure out how to play like, for example, King.
Yep.
And I'll just do stuff. I was like, wait, how did I do that? And of course, this was a time before we had YouTube and before we had like internet to figure out stuff. Yep. Like just the I had a notebook where I would write down like, okay, this I did this to do this move. I did this to do this move.
Yep.
Man, I absolutely love Tekken 3.
Yeah, and it's and I think there is something to be said, even though there is the old game is old thing.
Yeah.
But it's like I think there's something to be said about certain games before the Let's Play era, where, like you stated, there's a certain pride that you take for getting good at a game through your own devices.
Exactly. Like, it's sitting down and doing that time.
Yeah, it's like you had no choice but to learn.
Exactly.
And I thought that, and so, like, me getting good at Tekken 3, I was like, I felt like King shit atop Doodoo Mountain. Like, you know, like I was ready.
Yep.
And yeah, so Tekken 3 is my number 3.
Awesome.
Avery.
My number 3 is, speaking of old games, old, is the only Mega Man game I actually really love. The only one I've actually really actually, no, that's not true. I played the Mega Man Battle Network games. Okay. Is Mega Man Legends 2.
Mm.
My story of this game goes back to a really bad, not vacation, family trip I went on to go see my cousins in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And he had a PlayStation 1. And they needed something to do with me for 3 days because I clearly wasn't going to hang out with any of these people.
Yeah.
So we went to a Blockbuster. We rented. We went to two games. We went to two games. Spyro the Dragon. One of the Spyro games. I want to say the first one. Eat. And then Mega Man Legends 2. Now, my cousin was a dude who only played sports games. We didn't have a memory card. So at no point in these games could I save.
Right.
Oh, man.
So what ended up happening was I spent that entire weekend trying to get through Mega Man Legends 3, getting to the same part over and over and dying.
You mean
and,
two?
Two, I'm sorry, yeah, because they canceled 3.
Yeah,
there you go.
Getting to the same point
you
every time.
You got number 9. Don't hit me.
I won't. Getting to the same point every time, dying, restarting, doing 3 hours of that game over again, getting that same point, dying over and over again. And then I later in life...
Right?
He gets better. That's later in life, I got a PlayStation 2. I went to a GameStop. I found a copy of Mega Man Legends 2, and I said, oh, shit. Picked up a PlayStation 1 memory card, played it, actually was able to save, got through it, and I'm like, I fucking love this game.
Yeah.
I fucking love Mega Man. I love Mega Man Trigger. I love this role. I love this world. I love that it's a weird Zelda-like game.
Right, so that was a 3D version.
It was a 3D version. Yeah. It was released. It was originally Mega Man 64.
Okay.
And then it became Mega Man Legends retroactively when it went to PlayStation for 2.
Right.
It's a game where, like, a lot of it's so Zelda-like. I think that's why I really love it. Where, like, you go into a first couple worlds, and there are clearly places you want to go. Is Zelda-like or Castlevania-like? I don't know. Anyway, you go to the world and, like, here's a door, and it's, like, clearly made... No, here's a wall. It's clearly you can break it, but you don't have the thing to break it. I'll come back to that later. Come back to it later, you break it. It's a completely new part of the world you've never seen. And it had great bosses, great characters. It was anime as fuck. I love the shit out of it.
Dang.
Nothing broke my heart more than when they announced for 3DS, and I was like, cool, we're finally going to deal with the cliffhanger. Because that game ends with Mega Man stuck on the moon. And then his two friends like, we got to go rescue Mega Man.
Psych.
And that game ends with...
And he's trapped up there in my
hot-ass mom.
I'm so sorry.
And they announced it, they're like, we're going to build this game with you. Here's all this art. Like, it's fan. It's gonna like fan involvement. Yeah. You guys can make characters. And then Capcom canceled it. And I'm like,
get
fuck.
Old Capcom. Like, oh, people like that? Nah, not here.
and it's one of those weird things I had to deal with because it's such a departure from what Mega Man is.
Right.
That, like, there are a lot of purist Mega Man fans who hate it on principle. Like, this isn't a Mega Man game. And for me, this is Mega Man.
Mm, gotcha. All right, so my number 3 is also Tekken 3.
Okay, well.
But.
Okay.
Because I have to get this game in here somewhere.
Okay.
I'm going to switch that out. I'm going to sub it out for... Dragon's Dogma.
Dark Arisen. I'm gonna take a nap. Wake me up with this boring shit.
So, Dragon's Dogma is... So, for me, that game was in direct competition with Skyrim. Mm-hmm. And
another boring game.
No, yeah, you're right with that one. Like, I played Skyrim, I was like, oh, this is great. And then when I played Dragon's Dogma, for some reason in my mind, I was like, oh, this is better than Skyrim. It didn't even have to be better than Skyrim. It was just, oh, this is better than Skyrim. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, this is my game now. And that was it. Like,
I mean, I'll give you one thing. I think, even though I did not like Dragon's Dogma, I think...
What do you mean you didn't like Dragon's Dogma?
It is fundamentally one of the few games I played 2-3 hours of and actually put down and put to the back of my gaming queue. And like, I'll beat this eventually because I'm a compulsive person who has to beat games. But like, nah, man.
But also, I think...
You guys are missing out.
I think fundamentally...
I'll point out, I played and beat Skyrim instead of this.
I think fundamentally... The backstory of the whole main character and everything with Dragon's Dogma is a million times more interesting to me than Skyrim.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's actually had a story. I think so. I hadn't get far enough to see it.
He's like, oh, Dragonborn, Fushrota, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, like, the story, I just sidestepped the story. Like, I love the gameplay mechanics and just running around. Like, I feel like, oh boy, I don't even know if that's good to say, but I feel like that was one of the better implemented open world games. In terms of running around.
Is it an open world game or is it an open corridor game?
I'd say at the time it's open world. Because although it's like kind of like map area to map area, it was bigger maps. And like you can essentially run from like point A to point B and that'd be like 5 or 6 minutes. But like it wasn't like GTA level open world.
Oh, okay.
But like the fact that you can go from one point, fight these like flying harpy things that are kind of putting work on you, and you can kind of get to them, and then run into an ogre, and you're like, oh crap, this thing is like 3 times as big as I am. I have to climb on its back or like shoot it in the eye. Like, the way that they handled the mechanics in that game, I feel like those mechanics are handled better than like, Breath of the Wild. Like, where they have a good elemental system, but in terms of the variety of ways you can handle fighting enemies, I feel like Dragon's Dogma does it way better.
Okay.
And then the reason why I said Dark Arisen was because I got to the point in Dragon's Dogma where I had already beaten the story. I had maxed out all my stuff. I got all the different classes. And I was just like, what else am I going to do but sit here and wreck all these things? And they're like, oh, hey. Here's Dark Arisen. You're going on this island, and there's a whole bunch of high-level characters. Also, Death.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I'll take that challenge. I'll do that. And, like, that... Ugh, like, it's been so long now, I can't even remember what the story was. Again, story's not really strong in Dragon's Dogma. But, like, just the ability to fight higher-level, like, enemies is what I wanted, and they gave me what I wanted. And it was just, like, awesome.
Once again, I gotta give you props that you... are committed to this game,
yep.
And you have definitive reasoning,
yep.
As to why you love it.
Yep.
So, you know, even though we don't bang with it, you bang with it, and I appreciate that.
Awesome.
So, moving on, my number two is a toss-up.
Here we go.
Between Uncharted 2 and Uncharted 4.
Ooh.
My number two is also Uncharted 2.
So let's join it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uncharted 2 is...
There's a lot of love for Uncharted 2.
It's the best
Uncharted
game.
Like,
but Uncharted 4's story is so personal and this is blatantly
I'll toss it up like this. 2 is a better game, 4 has a better story.
Yeah. Cause Uncharted 2 benefits.
There's no Zarevich and his magic sap.
Exactly. Uncharted 4 benefits from the fact that it is a post Last of Us Naughty Dog game.
Right. Yeah,
so
yeah.
It also is able to build off the strength of Uncharted 1, 2, 3, and
exactly.
Goldfish.
Right, right.
So Uncharted 4's story is just so weighty and engaging. And on top of that, it's the culmination of Nathan Drake's journey.
Yeah.
And so you're instantly invested.
Right. It's a very heavy game in terms of what it means.
Whereas Uncharted 2 is the peak of set piece Uncharted.
So, okay, because I do this thing where I blend all the games together. Uncharted 2 is with the boat? The water?
No, that's 3.
That's 3.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uncharted 2 is the one with the train?
Yeah.
Oh, you start on the train?
Yeah, like you start on the train. Gotcha. It's one of the snow sections. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Okay.
And
the
Yetis.
Who aren't Yetis.
Love
that game.
And Uncharted 2, like I said, Uncharted 2 was when...
3 has an entire section of the game you can take out that doesn't change any part of that game at all.
There's
the section,
no...
The boat section.
Yeah.
I love the boat section, though.
You don't need it, though.
But yeah. I love the boat section.
It's, no, don't get me wrong. It's a like fun section. But narratively, the strength of what these games are, you don't need it.
There's no... none of the Uncharted games are bad.
Right.
So it's really just like arguing, like, yeah. But it's just like two...
It's arguing with what type of pizza is better.
Exactly.
It's pineapple. Like, that's not even a question. What?
Two.
I've made a huge mistake.
And that's the last we hear of Avery.
Two is like the most exciting of them. Like, it's like, if this was a movie franchise, two was the most exciting movie.
Yeah.
Because just the escalation of events in that game is amazing.
Yeah.
But four, it's just, that story's so good.
Yeah.
That story's so
good. Two is a game I could find, like, I don't normally go back and replay games. Two is a game I regularly replay, and I beat that game in less than a day because of just muscle memory.
Wow.
Like, I remember all of these set pieces. I remember all of these guys just by pure muscle memory. Like, this game isn't, like, it's, I remember seeing the, I didn't get a PS3 launch.
Okay.
So I got PS3 around, I want to say, when the Slim was announced.
Yeah.
And I remember that E3 when they demoed Uncharted 2.
Mm-hmm.
And there was that sequence of him and Chloe in that building as it was collapsing, as it was being chased by, attacked by helicopter.
Chloe was in 2.
Helicopter. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I went back and played 1. I'm like, okay, this is good. And I played 2. And I'm like, this is perfect. This is that, 2 is the first game I played and said straight up, this is a perfect game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That.
Yeah. I mean, it was a really good game. Yeah.
So yeah, your number 2.
My number two.
Your number
is Kingdom Hearts.
Which one?
Number 1.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
The reason why I do like Kingdom Hearts 2 more than Kingdom Hearts 1, but I feel like Kingdom Hearts 1 meant a lot more to me.
Okay, so you're one.
Plus that intro song, boy, Simple and Clean.
I like the Paradise remix.
Yeah.
2.8.
Jesus. So Kingdom Hearts, like, it hit me, like, at the perfect time. Like, I don't think, there wasn't really anything that I was, like, really, like, fiending on or anything. Like, so that, when that game came out, I was like, all right, I like the style of this. Like, I like the whole, like, mashing up Disney characters with Square aesthetics.
Yeah, it was fresh and new.
Yeah. So... Or Simple and Clean.
2002. Kingdom Hearts came out 2002.
2002. Jesus.
So I was 13.
Sophomore in high school. Ooh, I just aged myself. Anyways. that game, I mean, looking back on it, sure, it has its problems.
Right. Yeah.
But, like, just at the time.
I replayed it. It has its problems.
Oh, I didn't do that. Like, I didn't replay any of these games because I knew better.
But no, I still super enjoy the game, but things have changed. Like
in a
Final Fantasy XV world, we can change some of this.
Yeah, right,
I don't think your combat system should be a menu.
that's a little bit of a problem.
You know, Donald just never heals me.
Right? That was also a problem.
Maybe you put the Gambit system from Final Fantasy 12 in here. I don't know.
You motherfucker. I gave you a high potion and you use it immediately.
Donald.
Kingdom Hearts was always weird to me. It's one reason why I like 2 more. Is that I never... Like, I'm a child of the 90s, so I grew up with Disney, and they're always a cultural touchstone for me.
Yeah.
But, like, those weren't the parts of the game I was excited for.
Really?
Parts that I was excited for was, like, hanging out with Squall, again, my favorite Final Fantasy character. Like, not getting over him.
It was
the
opposite.
When you meet Cloud, and then, like, and something like that, the parts of it that weren't Disney. I love the Disney as a story trapping situation.
Right.
But in terms of like the characters and what I was more attached to with the Final Fantasy part, it's one of the reasons I like 2 more because like that is where the Disney stuff. One, they use Tron, which I'm a big Tron fan.
Yeah, I didn't really like that section.
That's fucking great. Space Paranoids.
Right.
But yeah, but like it was the organization, stuff like the Organization 13 and things like that, and this other meta stuff. It's gotten convoluted and crazy now.
I think 2 is where it started to get kind of convoluted with the whole agent or the organization. 13.
You about to call me Asian 13?
Right.
Asian 13,
right?
No, it's not. It's where you get to. It's birth by sleep where it gets super complicated.
Yeah, but I feel like they were on that track with.
I've also got a lot of love for 2 because it was the last time that Sora felt special.
That's true.
No, that's true. That's
very, it also has the two also has the best action in all of
the Kingdom Hearts 2 start with Roxas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like the last time Sora felt like this is the Keyblade Master, he is the chosen
one. Oh, in terms
now,
of
now it's like
everyone in the mother's Keyblade.
But then again, I'd say that wouldn't that be one then? Because two, Roxas had Keyblades,
like,
all Organization 13 had Keyblades.
Sora still felt like he was...
But the entire point of one is Sora's not the Keyblade Master.
Exactly. Like, it's Empire Strikes Back. Like, two feels like he finally coming to his own. It was the last time that it felt like Sora was driving this narrative.
Yeah, right.
And it
also
had the best... It also finally made the combat system feel... Like, it still had its problem with the stupid menu thing.
Yeah.
But also made the combat feel fun and exciting.
More fluid,
too. Like, that final fight with Ansem, when you get to that point where you're just in a room of lasers, and you just have to fucking fucking block them. Like...
Again, like, Kingdom Hearts 2, like, is my definitive Kingdom Hearts game.
But
you
enjoy it.
Right.
I also love the stories of Kingdom Hearts 2 about the Master Form that you can just get randomly. Like, our friend Zach got it in a fight.
Oh, right.
And then died.
Yeah.
And had to wait for it to spawn again later.
He didn't know what it was.
Right.
Like, wait a minute.
Why am I white? What does this mean?
Yeah. That game made me love Mickey Mouse for the first time.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Because Mickey Mouse pulled straight Yoda, and like he showed up in that Zelda fight, and I'm like, also, Leon the Squall finally went back his real name, stopped calling himself Leon.
Right? Who the hell is Leon?
Or fighting Sephiroth and...
Oh, man. Fun fact, voiced by Lance Bass from NSYNC.
Wow, really?
Yep.
That... is strange.
Funny story about that. Me and Marcus, we hang out all the time. I think it was one of his birthdays. I brought my copy of Kingdom Hearts 2, and he decided that he wanted to fight Sephiroth. Like, I was at I was at level maybe 30 or something. He said, I'm going to fight Sephiroth. I'm like, you're not going to do this. Stop doing it so I can play my game. Like,
right.
No, let me do this. So he spent all night trying to do this, dying like dozens of times. I'm like, you're not going to do this.
Yeah, I got murked. Relentlessly. But, my number one.
Number one.
Which would be unsurprising to anybody in this room, is The Last of Us. To me, The Last of Us is the greatest game that I've ever played.
Mm.
Not necessarily from a technical standpoint, but from the fact that it was the most I've ever been engrossed and invested in the story of a game.
Right.
I was in it all the way through. It was one of the rare times as an adult that I played a game and refused to stop playing it. Like, I would keep coming back, and I could not stop. There was no deviation.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I did that, like, with Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, you mean, like, that would be the game that you're playing right now? Okay.
Like, as a kid, I would, like, keep going back to games instinctively.
Right.
You know, get mad at my mom when she would call me for dinner because, I was like, you gotta save, Mom!
Right.
But, like, as an adult, I would always have deviation points because I have so much of many other things going on. But, like... Last of Us, I refused to stop until I was done.
Yeah.
And that story is absolutely phenomenal. I love those characters. I love that world. And I can't wait for number two. But yeah, that's my number one.
No, Last of Us is one of my honorable mentions. That is a game that I agree with. Yeah. I agree with the hyperbole that it's the best game. It's the best game Sony's ever put out. No, I'm saying it's the best game of the PlayStation 3 generation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And when I'm saying generation, I mean on all platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's not a single game, and I played a shit ton of them, that like, really sold
that
those.
That was that powerful.
Story. A powerful story, sold it with great gameplay. It can be argued that there are games that play mechanically better than Last of Us.
Yeah.
But that gave us that level of polish in gameplay and that level of polish in story, made them mesh together, and then gave you an ending where, like, I hate fucking... metaphorical endings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I prefer you be fucking concrete about what this is going to be
and what happened.
So,
yeah.
And it gives you an ending where it's just like super subtle as shit. There are like there's dozens of think pieces about what this ending means.
And
it's all fucking valid and all fucking good.
And the thing about that type of a metaphorical ending is it's the type of ending, if they would have went super literal with it, it would have actually detracted from the story they were telling.
Right, right.
Whereas this type of ending actually worked perfectly for the game. And on top of that, I think that this is one of the core games that flies in the face of that video games aren't art argument. Exactly. Or like, you know, like, why are you still playing video games? You're an adult. It's like
the most interesting thing about Last of Us, and it's not really talked about much because there are other games who have a bigger impact. It has fundamentally changed gaming as a whole. Mm-hmm. Making games like The Last of Us is now a reductive term you can make. I remember when Final Fantasy 15 was re-announced and they were talking about, we want this game to be like The Last of Us. I'm like, wait, what? And environmental storytelling, because a lot of the story in that game is not told through cutscenes, it's through interacting with the world and getting those environmental moments between these two characters talking. That's all over modern games as a whole.
No, that's true. Like, Last of Us was very, very influential in how games were designed.
Yeah.
It's really awesome.
Avery? Oh, well, yeah, we already said
my number one. Devil May Cry.
So,
okay. So my number one, like I said, we're going to get back to Gundam.
Oh, good one.
It's a mashup of three because I have this kind of meshed together in my head as one game. But it is Mobile Suit Gundam, Journey to Jabrow, / Federation vs. Zeon, / Zeonic Front.
This man went super deep cut.
Super. So, like, I was going to order my games in terms of how many hours I put into them.
Right.
And it kind of worked out that way.
Okay.
Like, I, mind you, this game, it got like a 6.5 out of 10 on IGN.
Okay.
Like, I will go back and I'll tell you, this game is garbage.
6.5, not enough grass.
But like, this game was garbage in terms of controls and everything. The only thing, the main thing that sold it for me was the fact that this is Gundam.
Right.
And this was the, this is like the Amuro Gundam. This is like the first Gundam.
Okay.
So, like, with that, like, he basically, like, took this Gundam that didn't really operate, and he was the, I forget the term that they used, but, like, he was, like, the
Amuro Ray, new type.
Yeah, new side. There we go.
I've watched a shit ton of Gundam.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So, like, the fact that, like, he pretty much mastered this Gundam and was able to, like, put some work in on people.
That's pretty cool.
He's, for lack of a better term, a mutant.
Yeah.
He was just born genetically better than everyone else at this one thing and falling into the cockpit of a Gundam, which is the entire genre of anime after Gundam is what allowed him to be what he wanted to be.
Wait a minute. Was Amuro autistic?
I don't think so.
No?
Okay. No. Okay. If you want to talk about autistic, they're one of the main characters. He's not autistic. He's a sociopath. There's a difference.
Oh, okay. Continue. So, yeah.
Avery would know.
Right. So, so this game, it really spoke to me. Like, I was big into Gundam at the time. I mean,
right.
I still kind of am. I mean, I don't really follow new stuff. But still, like, I just love this game, and I just forgave all of its shortcomings. Like, movement was terrible. Like, there was, like, almost a whole second delay between moving and shooting, which you think would be, like, oh, how would you play that game? But I made it work. And, like, I absolutely adored and loved that game. And then with Federation vs. Zeon, they introduced more Gundam types and a couple different, like, further played out the story, like what's going on in
the world.
Yeah, yeah, and like all that stuff just spoke to me, and I just absolutely loved it. Like I would never go back and play any of these games.
Well, the thing is, hey, it's
like,
and then you're number one,
and that's my number one, and my number one. I would not go. See, the thing is, like, for me, like, old game is old.
Yeah,
except for Melee. But old game is old. And, like, I know that, because I've tried before going back and playing those old games. And was like, oh, I just ruined this for me. Like, this is going to be my memory now.
Devil May Cry 3 is still great.
Yeah? Yeah, great. So, yeah, I know for a fact that, well, I should say that I will be playing Dragon's Dogma once it's re-released on PlayStation 4.
No. Okay.
Yes. I will be touching back on that. But, yeah.
But, yeah, you know, we've got honorable mentions, but, you know, we're running out of time. We're getting a little.
Nah, fuck it. I'm going to mention my honorable mentions. Okay, my honorable mentions were games I didn't put on this list.
So we're just going to run real quick.
I'm just going to run through them. Right. Mario Kart Double Dash, fucking the best Mario Kart. 8 is mechanically a better game, but nothing speaks to me more than Mario Kart Double Dash. Mass Effect 2, best Mass Effect. Borderlands 2, turned a great game better. And Dead Space 2. Dead Space 2 is the only Dead Space anyone needs to play.
Okay. My honorable mentions are Def Jam 5 for New York, Super Smash Bros. Brawl, Mass Effect 2, Double Dragon versus Battletoads, and Wolfenstein:
The New Order.
The New Order.
Ooh. And my honorable mentions are Call of Duty: Modern Warfare, mm-hmm. one.
Best Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm. Last of Us, which we talked about. Mm-hmm. Uncharted 3, which we loosely talked about. And Halo.
Yeah. First.
First one.
And yeah, that's been our first DLC pack.
If you guys have any ideas for other things you want to tell us, please, I'm begging you. We have so many avenues. Just let us know. Speak to us.
Yeah.
Because we're doing this
for you. The people.
I wish you guys told me you were going to do that. I would have joined in.
That'll be quicker, man.
Yeah.
So, but we hope that coming out of this, you feel like you know us a little better, as you know, people and gamers, yep. and that you have a bit more of a connection with us, because that's the point of doing this. We want to connect with y'all.
We want to touch you.
Yeah, in your no place. But
cut the feed. Cut the feed.
But yeah, this has been a lot of fun for us. We look forward to doing more and delivering it to you. But I've been Mark Selson.
I've been Avery Williams.
And I've been Donald. Donald.
Press X to start out.